On this week's edition of New York Now, Governor Andrew Cuomo's fight with the Trump administration over New York's immigration policies continues in Albany. A top official visits the state.
Short of taking our guns away, I can think of no law that would be more dangerous to our officers and our agents.
Legislation in Albany could make it harder for ICE officers to arrest immigrants at state courthouses. Assemblywoman Mikhail Szilagyi joins me in studio to explain.
They're undercover in plain clothes, just grabbing individuals off the street corner and throwing them into the car.
The state's new laws on cash bail have been a hot topic lately, but not everyone has their facts straight. We clear things up with Norm Reamer from the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. And the Reporters Roundtable is in to break it all down. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.
Today, the Senate majority will pass
a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. It's not often that a top official from the federal government comes to New York to criticize the state's policies, but that's what happened this week in Albany. Matthew Albence, the acting director of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, flew to the Albany area to speak out against New York's green light law. That's the law that allows undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses in New York. But the law also blocks the federal government from accessing the state's DMV database. Democrats thought the federal government might use that data to target immigrants for deportation. Albin said that part of the law has made it harder for his agency and others to do their jobs.
As a 25-year law enforcement professional, it's unfathomable that information which could be used to prevent crime or a potential terrorist attack is purposely being withheld in this state, the same state which less than 20 years ago suffered the worst terrorist attack on American soil.
It's unlikely that Democrats will agree to give the federal government access to the state's DMV database anytime soon. Cuomo and the state's top lawmakers have already said they won't do it. Immigration issues generally have support among Democrats in the legislature, and that's not expected to change. One bill we're watching would make it harder for ICE officers to arrest undocumented immigrants at state courthouses, which have become a target of the federal government in recent years. The Immigrant Defense Project says the number of times those officers either made an arrest at a state courthouse in New York or were seen in the area increased by 1,700% between 2016 and last year. Assemblywoman Mikhail Szilagyi sponsors the legislation and joined me in studio to explain. Assemblywoman Mikhail Szilagyi, thanks so much for being here on New York Now this week.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
Absolutely. So we're here to talk about the Protect Our Courts Act. And I want you to explain the bill a little bit, but essentially from my understanding is it would prevent undocumented immigrants from being arrested inside of state courthouses by ICE officers and on their way to and from court. Am I getting that right?
That is correct. You know that New York State is one of the largest court systems. On average, 3 million cases are filed. So we know that people are interacting with the judicial system almost every day. And so when we talk about what's happening since the inauguration of Donald Trump, immigrants are afraid to go to court. They're afraid that they're going to be deported by ICE agents. And so I am a sponsor with the Senator Hoylman of a bill that would prevent ICE from arresting people, individuals, to and from court without a judicial warrant.
I think people would be really surprised to know that ICE officers are targeting state courthouses in New York for immigrants for deportation. Is this something that is new over the past couple of years, or has this been a longstanding practice that we know of?
You know, it's been happening more often since the new administration. And Immigrant Defense Project actually has documented a 1,700% increase since 2016. So now
Wow.
It's becoming more of a common practice. And it's creating a chilling effect. You see that immigrants, undocumented individuals, are so afraid to go to court. Even if they're here, if they have status, they're afraid to go to court because ICE agents are coming, they're not listening to the law, they're being aggressive, and they're picking up people as if it's like a movie. You see they're undercover in plain clothes, just grabbing individuals off the street corner and throwing them into the car.
So just for some context for our viewers, the state court system has this directive right now that says that ICE officers can't arrest inside of a courthouse without a warrant from a federal judge. But this bill would go a little bit further. It would say they can't arrest them if they're on their way to or from court. What do we mean when we're talking about that? Is it a certain distance, or how do we define that?
So in April 2019, the court system actually did a directive, as you said before, saying that they can't arrest individuals in the courthouse. That's great. It's a great first step, but not going to and from court. So there's no zone of protection. So what ICE is now doing is just waiting outside the courthouse for the individual to walk outside and arresting them. And so essentially, they know this. They've even said this out loud in some documented cases where they said, oh, well, we can't get you inside the courthouse. We'll just wait for you when you leave or when you enter. There's one case where they waited outside of a deli and they saw the individual. They identified them in court, waited for them to go into the deli and grab them inside the deli.
How did they find out when these immigrants are going to be there?
So there's a public docket. Before you go to court, usually there's a document that says that this is the time of your court date, and it's public knowledge. So me and you, any citizen, and any law enforcement can see that you're going to court. So it's kind of easy. They're being very, very lazy.
So if this bill were to pass, say an ICE officer violates it, or maybe a state court employee just doesn't know that these rules are in place, what recourse would immigrants have if they get arrested by an ICE officer without a judicial warrant?
So with the Protect Our Courts Act, they would be able to, the judge would be able to file a contempt of court against the ICE agents. It would also allow the Attorney General to civilly sue ICE. In addition, it allows a person to have some type of recourse, be able to civilly sue them. So it puts provisions in to protect us. We've seen that another state has done this directive that included the zone of protection, and ICE has not violated that zone of protection. So it works, and Massachusetts implemented that, and it works.
I'm wondering about this from a legal standpoint of this bill, because I can already see that people on the other side of the aisle may say, well, immigration is an exclusively federal thing to regulate. How do you see this playing out? Do you think that you might get a legal challenge over this bill from the federal government?
Well, we welcome it. We had many people vet this bill. In addition, there is actually law in place that protects individuals from going to and from court when it comes to civil debts. So 100 years ago, this was a problem with debtors. Debtors would wait outside, or people who were issuing the debt would wait outside and wait for people to come to court, and they would grab them. And so 100 years ago, they implemented a similar law. You know, everything circles around. Now we're talking about this situation we have here. So we're just extending the law so that all New Yorkers, regardless of their immigration status, is protected.
So with the makeup in the legislature right now, we have Democrats controlling both the Senate and the Assembly. I know that you were working on the bill last year as well.
Oh, that's correct.
This year, what needs to happen for it to get across the finish line?
Well, we have a great coalition of advocates and also leaders, legislative leaders, who want to get this done. So I'm very confident that we can get it done. It's just about making sure we push it to get done as soon as possible. We see that with the implementation of the green light bill, we see the success. We see many people are going to get their driver's license. So, of course, traffic infractions are going to happen. I get parking tickets. Oh, don't tell anyone.
So do I.
but it happens. So we have to extend this provision to ensure that if you're going to court, these people are protected. It's just the next step of the green light bill.
And I know the governor, when he was talking about the green light bill last year, he seemed to have some reservations about it from a legal standpoint.
Yes.
Do we know how he feels about this one?
Well, we hope that he's on board. But at this point, you know, we just want to protect our immigrant New Yorkers. And so that's what we need to do. And so regardless of your political alignment or anything, we just need your support.
Before we run out of time, I want to switch topics with you and talk about a bill you have that would ban what are called virginity exams?
Correct.
Tell
yes.
me what these are and why this happens.
So we heard last year a famous rapper came out and said that he, on the 18th birthday of his daughter, comes, puts a note on her door and says that we're going to the gynecologist. And at the gynecologist, they do a virginity exam on her. We saw the outpouring of rage. And so I submitted a bill saying that virginity exams are banned in New York State. And we know that our virginity exam or hymen exams is when someone looks into, to see if a woman is a virgin or not. And so we want to ensure that doesn't happen because we know that hymen exams are unscientific.
Right. I was just going to say, is this a real thing?
Unfortunately, it is a real thing. Since I put in the bill, there are people who have come up to me and said that they were subject to hymen exams. And we know that unscientific, unnecessary, and really a violation of a woman's rights.
So what's the next step for that bill? I know that I think it was just this year that you introduced it. So
yeah,
where
I just introduced the bill. We're getting a lot of support. I believe that all of the House and also the governor is interested in doing the bill. We're just working and tweaking some of the language. But I believe that we can get it done this year because it's just crazy that this is a practice that is happening.
Right. So we'll keep an eye on both of those bills. Yeah. Assemblywoman Mikhail Szilagyi, thank you so much for joining us on New York Now.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, and now for some analysis of the week's news. I'm Casey Seiler of the Times Union, and we're at the Reporters Roundtable, where I'm happy to be joined by Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Shannon Young, who covers healthcare for Politico. Thanks very much for coming in.
Sure.
So we just saw footage from the visit by Matthew Albence, the ICE acting director. I guess the question here is there a way out of this dispute between the feds and New York, specifically Governor Andrew Cuomo? The governor, of course, has offered this compromise whereby ICE would be able to have access to the DMV database for people who are applying for the Trusted Traveler Program. And what ICE seems to be saying is that's just not good enough. We need more.
I know. It sure seems like there isn't a way out of this. And it seems like it's an escalating war between President Trump and New York State and specifically Governor Cuomo. Now, Cuomo met with Trump, I guess it was the middle of last week. And Trump was supposed to get back to him this week, kind of solution. So far, as of Friday morning, that has not happened. So it just seems like the president's kind of out for revenge on New York. He's annoyed with the policies that have been happening. And Cuomo doesn't want to back down. I mean, the big question is, would the legislature go back and revisit the green light law somehow and maybe roll back and allow the feds to see some of the data? And I don't know. I just don't see it happening. Like, politically, that would be very hard for some of the more liberal Democrats to do.
And I think it's important to point out that when they were debating this bill at the end of last session, that a concern that you heard over and over again was, how is this going to affect people who are undocumented? Is the federal government going to be able to come in? And they were assured that, no, that wasn't going to happen. So I feel that, you know, lawmakers aren't really, they don't have much of an appetite for doing that.
But another funny thing is the sheriffs now are complaining. They said they were coerced into signing these agreements. And I look back at some of the coverage when this was passed in June, and you didn't hear anything from the sheriffs. And they're not unsophisticated people. You know, they have their lobbying arm that, like, I would have gladly have covered this if this was a complaint. So I'm kind of, you know, curious
wondering
as to why
it's coming up
now. It's coming up and they seem really angry.
You mentioned the president hasn't gotten back to the governor. I think many people would say that perhaps a visit from the acting director of ICE a week after Cuomo went to the White House could be seen as something of a response.
Good point.
We should move on. The governor is getting out of town, he says, with 6 weeks to go before the budget deadline. He is taking what has been jokingly, but also kind of seriously, referred to as a weed tour. Shannon, can you cast light on this?
Yeah, so yesterday, Governor Cuomo, at the end of a press conference on vaping, just kind of added in as an offhanded comment that he plans to visit Massachusetts, Illinois, and either Colorado or California to learn more about how their marijuana policies have rolled out. He was arguing that, you know, there was a lot of talk in the lead up to when these laws passed or these referenda passed. And, you know, he kind of wants to see how things have actually turned out, if there's been any unintended consequences. And he wants to learn from those mistakes and bring that lesson back to not only New York, but other governors in the region who are part of this regional approach to weed that he's been pushing since last fall.
Isn't it a little bit late in the process for him to take this tour? Recreational adult use marijuana infrastructure that the governor first proposed more than a year ago.
You would think that he would have this information or have his people collected, or there'd be some kind of conference. That it just seems kind of late if we're supposedly going to possibly get legal cannabis in about a month, that he'd just now be looking to see what the others are doing. I don't know. The theory going around is that, you know, it's been a long winter. It's bored in the mansion. Who wouldn't want to go on a tour of Colorado, California, and all those places, right?
Road trip.
Right. Yes, exactly.
So with the budget in mind, what is the state of play? We're talking Friday morning. Shannon, the last of the public comment sessions for the Medicaid redesign team happens today in Albany. Of course, many critics think that many of those budget cutting proposals have already been written.
Right. So at this point, a lot about the budget is still question marks, especially when it comes to Medicaid, which has been identified as the largest driver of the deficit. So it's about $4 billion of the $6 billion budget hole. So Cuomo's appointed a Medicaid redesign team to go in and find $2.5 billion in savings. The panel, which was named only a couple weeks ago, has until mid-March, which is about a month to work and find these savings. And they've been doing some public comment forums over the last week, which have been met with heavy criticism from advocates and different sectors of the healthcare industry. So, you know, the New York City one was interrupted by protesters. The first one in Albany was interrupted by protesters. The Rochester one was more tame, but we'll see today how this all turns out. But, you know, with public comments due by noon today, and then those are going to be discussed on March 2nd, it seems like it's a little bit of a rush job and nobody really knows what's going on with this.
It's going to be really late for the legislature to have any input if right. they don't report till mid or late March if they're going to do the budget right. on time, which is why a lot of conspiracy theories out mm-hmm. there that it's a done deal. The governor already knows what he's going to do, but he just doesn't want to tell anybody until the last minute, especially if it's bad news.
Yeah, and lawmakers have been very critical of this whole process and timeline, noting that even though they're saying that these proposals are due by mid-March, there's nothing in statute, there's no executive order, there's no hard deadline. So it's still unclear when exactly they're going to hear about these proposals and in what form that's going to be.
Yeah,
so.
It could be March 28th or something.
Right. In other words, that the proposals just show up on March 28th and the legislature is left with a like it or lump it.
Yeah, or either do a late budget in an election year, which would reflect badly on them.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and Shannon Young of Politico.
Thank you.
Thanks to Casey and this week's Roundtable. The state's new laws on cash bail have been in effect for about 7 weeks now, and they've already become a top issue for state lawmakers this year. Some are pushing for the laws to change, while others want them to stay the same. But the new laws are confusing, and there's been a lot of misinformation about what they actually do. We spoke to Norm Reamer from the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers to set the record straight. Norm Reamer, the Executive Director of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, thanks for joining us on New York Now.
It's great to be here.
So we're here today talking about those criminal justice reforms in New York, the new bail laws. We make it to discovery as well, but I think the bail reform is really the biggest topic among people speaking mm-hmm. in New York right now. Explain to me briefly what the law actually does, just because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about what actually was passed.
Well, let me talk about what it does, but let me give it a little bit of context and say why there were changes made in the bail law.
Please do, yes.
Bail in New York was an instrument of fundamental injustice. Cash bail has been a catalyst for a two-tiered system of justice, where those who have money get to go home while their case is pending, and those who don't would sit in jail. And the consequences of sitting in jail while your case is pending, you haven't been proved guilty of anything, you haven't even had a trial, is potentially the loss of a job, the loss of family, the loss of a home, you can get evicted, all of these terrible things. And what we have found around the country is that where we have reduced the pretrial detention rates, recidivism actually decreases. There have been studies that show the longer you keep somebody in at the beginning of the case, the more likely that they will eventually become recidivist for all of these common sense reasons. They're losing the anchors in their life. And so this was an attempt to try somewhat to level the playing field. And it really was, in many ways, a modest attempt, because primarily it did away with cash bail, but only for most misdemeanors and a couple of felonies.
So kind of on that same vein, I want to spend a big part of this interview doing some kind of fact-checking about the new bail laws, because, like I said, I feel like there's a lot of misinformation. What we see in the media right now is a lot of cases of, I shouldn't say a lot, there's not a lot of cases, but the media is reporting a small number of cases where we have repeat offenders who are charged with a crime, released, and then hours later are charged again and then released. What power do judges have there if somebody is repeating an offense or charged repeatedly?
Well, first of all, it depends upon the nature of the crime. So if it's a low-level crime, then they're not going to be eligible for bail. But if an individual was released and they reoffend, then the judge can put other conditions on them in order to manage the situation. If it's a serious crime, if they're out and they commit a felony offense, then bail can be set. This whole business of cherry-picking and demagoguing is what we at New Yorkers United for Justice are most concerned about, both with the discovery law and with the bail law. Taking a case, often twisting the facts, and then using that as a weapon to try to bring down the entire reform is fundamentally irresponsible and, frankly, not in the public interest.
There's also these other cases where, and I think this is kind of the same situation, where somebody may have been charged with manslaughter, which, just from a legal perspective, you're a lawyer, and I know a little bit about law, I think, manslaughter isn't what it sounds like. It's not like slaughtering a man, you know? It's a homicide, but an unintentional homicide.
Right. Well, there are degrees of manslaughter.
Right.
One of the cases that got attention was somebody who was charged with manslaughter in the second degree. That is not a violent offense.
Right.
That is not an offense that involves an intent to do any harm. So logically, that offense was not put in the bucket of offenses for which cash bail should be used. That person should be out. Now, the DA then rearrested the man and elevated the charges. I certainly hope that they didn't do that simply to make an example. If they thought that manslaughter in the second degree was the appropriate charge, I would hope they didn't ratchet it up to a higher charge because he was released. But I'm, without getting into the facts of the case, it is appropriate that a manslaughter where there's no intent, there's no depraved recklessness, should frankly not be subject to cash bail. Again, cash bail, the elimination of cash bail changed nothing except for those who didn't have money. The rich have always gotten out. Those with means have always gotten out on these very same categories of offenses. And for all those other violent offenses, first of all, remand is possible with no conditions, no bail conditions. And even for all of those violent offenses for which bail can still be set, we still have disparity with rich people getting out. And I'm sure you know that there are some high visibility cases out there where people charged with really serious crimes can post $1 million.
Right. We have the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, the Sheldon Silvers of the world for some of our viewers who might remember who Sheldon Silver is. There's also this question of, and I think this has become a big word in Albany, especially over the past few weeks, it's called dangerousness. And what people have described this as a defendant's perceived threat to public safety, and that's by the judge. It would be by the judge. We don't have that in New York. And I think there is a misconception that prior to these laws coming into effect, judges were able to evaluate dangerousness. Can you kind of clear that up?
I'll do my best to clear that up.
Please.
First of all, New York has never had dangerousness. The problem with putting dangerousness in is who decides what's dangerous? Does a judge just put their finger up in the air? How do you decide it in a way that doesn't disparately impact minorities and poor people? The reality is that for those offenses for which bail or remand is possible, judges have been setting bail or remand for decades without dangerousness. They use other factors to consider, you know, what bails to set based upon prior criminal history, based upon the offense. So it doesn't add anything to the mix. And what the danger is that one of the fundamental concerns we have is the racially disparate impact of our criminal justice system. And something as subjective as that, you really would have to look at what all the protections were before you ever start thinking about that.
Do other states use that kind of dangerousness standard when deciding if somebody should be held before trial or released?
Well, they do up to a point. And then, of course, the federal system also has a detention provisions. And what we've seen with the federal system, which is something that we really have to be cognizant of, is when they did away with bail in the federal system and created a mechanism for pretrial detention, it was supposed to be the exception. But now the statistics are that as much as 60% of all federally charged people are detained with no conditions of release. So this is a very, not to get into a pun, but it's a very dangerous road to go down.
Right, and that kind of brings me to the Senate proposal from last week. We saw this proposal from a handful of Senate Democrats. It would take the laws as they are now, how you described them at the top of the interview, and eliminate cash bail altogether. And then it would send judges more discretion, more tools to evaluate somebody's so-called dangerousness or a risk assessment tool, as some people may call it. Is this a step forward or is this a step back?
We can't make any judgment unless we see exactly what's proposed, which we haven't seen. As I said, New York didn't have dangerousness. We don't need dangerousness. We don't need to give judges that tool. My biggest point about all of this is that for the vast majority of offenses, of violent offenses, all but two, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. We have said that on low-level offenses, we shouldn't be keeping people in jail because they don't have money. Because the reality is, let me cut to the chase of what the real problem is. The real problem is you're using bail as punishment, and you're punishing people before they've even been tried. That's exactly what bail should not be used for.
All right. I could talk about this for hours with you, Norm, but thank you so much for joining us here on New York Now. Norm Reamer, he's the executive director of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and the chair of New Yorkers United for Justice.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
For more on what we covered on this week's show, head over to New York Now's website at nynow.org and follow us on social media at nynow_PBS. Until then, I'm Dan Clark. Thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.